Chapter 14. At about the moment when Lord Emsworth had knocked at Percy Pilbeam's door to inquire after his health and make his kindly suggestion of a breath of fresh air, his sister, Lady Constance Keeble, his sister, Lady Julia Fish, and his neighbour and guest, Sir Gregory Parslow, were gathered together in the drawing-room, talking things over and endeavouring to come to some agreement as to the best method of handling the situation which had arisen. The tone of the meeting had been a little stormy from the very outset. Owing to the suddenness of his summons to the castle and the difficulty of explaining things over the telephone, all that Sir Gregory had known till now was the bare fact that Pilbeam had obtained possession of the manuscript and was proposing to deliver it to Lord Tilbury. Informed over the coffee-cups by Lady Julia that the whole disaster was to be attributed to her sister Constance's tactless handling of the fellow, he had drawn his breath in sharply, gazed at Lady Constance in a reproachful manner, and started clicking his tongue. Any knowledgeable person could have guessed what would happen after that. No woman of spirit can sit calmly and have a man click his tongue at her. No hostess, on the other hand, can be openly rude to a guest. Seeking an outlet for her emotions, Lady Constance had begun to quarrel with Lady Julia. And as Lady Julia, always fond of a family row, had borne her end of the encounter briskly, before he knew where he was, Sir Gregory became aware that he had sown the wind and was reaping the whirlwind. We mention these things to explain why it happened that there was a certain delay before GHQ took the obvious step of trying to establish communication with Percy Pilbeam. More than a quarter of an hour had elapsed before Sir Gregory was able to still the tumult of battle with these arresting words.
"But I say, dash it, don't you think we ought to see the fella?"
They acted like magic. Angry passions were chained. Good things about to be said were corked up and stored away for use on some future occasion. The bell was rung for Beach. Beach was dispatched to Pilbeam's room with instructions to desire him to be so good as to step down to the drawing-room for a moment, and the end of it all was that Beach returned and announced that Mr. Pilbeam was not there. Consternation reigned.
"Not there?" cried Lady Constance.
"Not there?" cried Lady Julia.
"But he must be there," protested Sir Gregory. "Fellow goes into his room with a headache to lie down and have a sleep," he proceeded, arguing closely. "Stands to reason he must be there."
"You can't have knocked loudly enough, Beach," said Lady Constance.
"Go up and knock again," said Lady Julia.
"Hit the dash door a good hard bang," said Sir Gregory.
Beach's demeanour was respectful but unsympathetic.
"Receiving no response to my knocking, milady, I took the liberty of entering the room. It was empty."
"Empty? Empty? You mean," said Sir Gregory, who liked to get these things straight, "that there wasn't anybody in the room?"
Beach inclined his head. "The bedchamber was unoccupied," he assented.
"He may be in the smoking room," suggested Lady Constance.
"Or the billiard room," said Lady Julia.
"Having a bath," cried Sir Gregory, inspired. "Fellow with a headache might quite easily go and have a bath. Do his headache good."
"I visited the smoking room and the billiard room, milady. The door of the bathroom on Mr. Pilbeam's floor was open, revealing emptiness within. I am inclined to think, milady," said Beach, "that the gentleman has gone for a walk."
The awful words produced a throbbing silence. Only too well could these three visualize the direction in which, if he had taken a walk, Percy Pilbeam would have taken it.
"Thank you, Beach," said Lady Constance dully.
The butler bowed and withdrew. The silence continued unbroken. Sir Gregory walked heavily to the window and stood looking out into the night. It almost seemed to him that across that starry sky he could see written in letters of flame the story of the prawns. Lady Constance gave a shuddering sigh.
"We shan't have a friend left."
Lady Julia lit a cigarette.
"But poor old Miles, bang goes his reputation."
Sir Gregory turned from the window.
"Those local committee chaps will give the nomination to old Billing now, I suppose."
His Regency buck face twisted with injured wrath.
"Why the devil need the fellow have been in such a hurry? Why couldn't he at least have let me talk to him? I brought my checkbook with me specially. He knows I'd have given him £500. I'll bet he won't get that from this Tilbury of his. I met Tilbury. I've heard stories about him. Mean man. Tight with his money. Pilbeam be lucky if he gets a couple of hundred out of him.
A pity you put his back up like that, Connie, said Lady Julia suavely. I don't suppose now he cares about the money so much. What he wants is to be nasty.
What I think a pity, retorted Lady Constance with the splendid Keeble spirit, is that Sir Gregory ever mentioned the matter to a man like this Pilbeam. He might have known that he was not to be trusted.
Exactly, said Lady Julia, an insane thing to do.
This unexpected alliance disconcerted Sir Gregory Parslow. He spluttered.
Well, I had dealings with the fellow before on a private matter, and had found him alert and enterprising. I just went and engaged him naturally, as you would engage anyone to do something. It never occurred to me that he wasn't to be trusted.
Not even after you saw that moustache, said Lady Julia. Well, there's just one gleam of comfort in this business, Connie. We shall now be able to talk to Clarence and put a stop to any nonsense of his giving Ronnie his money.
That's true, said Lady Constance, brightening a little. As she spoke, the door opened, and Percy Pilbeam came in. Everybody, as the poet so well says, is loved by someone, and it is to be supposed, therefore, that somewhere in the world there were faces that lit up when even Percy Pilbeam entered the room. But never, not even by his mother, if he had a mother, nor by some warm-hearted aunt, if he had a warm-hearted aunt, could he have been more rapturously received than he was received now by Lady Constance Keeble, by Lady Julia Fish, and by Sir Gregory Parslow Parslow Bart of Matchingham Hall Salop. Santa Claus himself would have had a less enthusiastic welcome.
"Mr. Pilbeam! Mr. Pilbeam! Pilbeam, my dear chap!
Come in, Mr. Pilbeam. Sit down, Mr. Pilbeam.
Pilbeam, my dear fella, a chair.
How is your headache, Mr. Pilbeam? Are you feeling better, Mr. Pilbeam?
Pilbeam, old man, I have a cigar here which I think you will appreciate.
The investigator looked from one to the other with growing bewilderment. Though an investigator, he could not deduce what had caused this exuberance. He had come to the room expecting a sticky 10 minutes, and had forced himself to face it because business was business, and, now that the ghastly pig had transferred almost the entire manuscript of the Honourable Galahad's reminiscences to its loathsome inside, it was from the group before him alone that he could anticipate anything in the nature of a cash settlement.
"Thanks," he said, accepting the chair. "Thanks," he said, taking the cigar. "Thanks," he said, in response to the inquiries after his health. "No, it isn't so bad now."
"That's good," said Sir Gregory heartily.
"Splendid," said Lady Constance.
"Capital," said Lady Julia. These paeans of joy concluded, there occurred that momentary hush which always comes over any gathering or assembly when business is about to be discussed. Pilbeam's eyes were flickering warily from face to face. He had got to do some expert bluffing and was bracing himself to the task.
"I came about that thing," he said at length.
"Exactly, exactly, exactly," cried Sir Gregory. "You've been thinking it over, and..."
"I'm afraid I was a little abrupt, Mr. Pilbeam," said Lady Constance winningly, "when we had our last little talk. I was feeling rather upset. The weather, I suppose."
"You did say that you had your cheque-book with you, Sir Gregory," said Lady Julia.
"Certainly, certainly. Here it is."
There came into Mr. Pilbeam's eyes the gleam which always came into them when he saw cheque-books.
"Well, I've done it," he said,
in what he tried to make a cheery, big-hearted manner.
"Done it?" cried Lady Constance, appalled.
The words conveyed to her a meaning different from that intended by their speaker.
"You don't mean you've taken..."
"You wanted that manuscript destroyed, didn't you?"
said Pilbeam.
"Well, I've done it."
"What?"
"I've destroyed it. Torn it up. As a matter of fact, I burned it."
"So?"
said Pilbeam, and cut his remarks off short on the word, filling out the hiatus with a meaning glance at the cheque-book. He licked his lips nervously as he did so. He was well aware that the conference had now arrived at what Monty Bodkin would have called the nub. The committee of three evidently felt the same. There was another silence, an awkward silence this time, pulsing with embarrassment and doubt. It is always so embarrassing for well-bred people to tell a fellow human being that they do not believe him. Moreover, any intimation on the part of these particular well-bred people that they thought this man was lying to them would most certainly wound that sensitiveness of his which it was so dangerous to wound.
On the other hand, could they pay out large sums of money to a man with a moustache like that, purely on the off chance that he might for once be telling the truth? The committee paused on the horns of a dilemma. said Sir Gregory, rather neatly summing up the sentiment of the meeting. Percy Pilbeam displayed an unforeseen amiability in this delicate situation.
Of course, I don't expect you to take my word for it, he said. Naturally, you want some sort of proof. Well, here's a bit of the thing which I saved to show you. The rest is a pile of ashes.
From his breast pocket, he produced a tattered fragment of paper and handed it to Sir Gregory. Sir Gregory, after wincing with some violence, for by an odd chance the fragment happened to deal with the story of the prawns, passed it to Lady Constance. Lady Constance looked at it and gave it to Lady Julia. The tension relaxed.
"It is not quite what we intended," said Lady Constance. "Naturally, we expected you to bring the manuscript to us, so that we could destroy it with our own hands. Still..."
"Comes to the same thing?"
argued Pilbeam.
"Yes, I suppose it doesn't really matter."
Glances flitted to and fro like butterflies. Sir Gregory looked at Lady Constance, seeking guidance. Lady Constance silently consulted Lady Julia. Lady Julia gave a quick nod. Sir Gregory, having noted it, and looked at Lady Constance again and received a nod from her, went to the writing-table and became busy with pen and ink. Chattiness ensued. Something of the atmosphere of a boardroom at the conclusion of an important meeting had crept into the air.
"I'm sure we are all very much obliged to you," said Lady Constance.
"But tell me, Mr. Pilbeam," said Lady Julia, "what caused this sudden change of heart?"
"Pardon?"
"Well, when you left us before dinner, you seemed so determined to..."
"Oh, Clarence!"
cried Lady Constance, with the exasperation which the head of the family's entry into a room so often caused her. He would, she felt, choose this moment to come in and potter. But for once in his life, Lord Emsworth was in no pottering mood. The tempestuous manner of his eruption should have told Lady Constance that. His demeanour and the tone of his remarks now enabled her to perceive it. Quite plainly, something had occurred to stir him out of his usual dreamy calm.
"Who moves my books?" he demanded fiercely.
"What books?"
"I keep a little book of telephone numbers on the table in the library, and it's gone."
"Ha!" said Lord Emsworth.
"Beach would know."
He leapt to the fireplace and pressed the bell.
"You'll break your neck if you go springing about like that on this parquet floor," observed Lady Julia languidly.
"Why skip ye so, ye high hills?" Lord Emsworth returned to the centre of the room. He was glaring in what his sister Constance considered an extremely uppish manner. He seemed to her to have got quite above himself.
"Do go away, Clarence," she said. "We're talking about something important."
"And so am I talking about something important. Once and for all, I insist on having my personal belongings respected. I will not have my things moved. My little book of telephone numbers has gone. I suppose you've got it, Connie. Took it to look up some number or other and couldn't be bothered to put it back."
"Tcha!"
said Lord Emsworth.
"I have not got your wretched little book," said Lady Constance wearily. "What do you want it for?"
"I want to ring up that fellow."
"What fellow?"
"That fellow, what's his name? The vet. It's a matter of life and death, and I've forgotten his number."
"What do you want the vet for?" asked Lady Julia. "Are you ill?" Lord Emsworth stared.
"What do I want the vet for? When the Empress has been eating that paper?"
"What paper does the Empress take in?" said Lady Julia. "I've often wondered. Something sound and conservative, I suppose. Probably the Morning Post."
"What are you talking about, Clarence?" said Lady Constance.
"Why, about the Empress eating that book of Galahad's, of course. Hasn't Pilbeam told you?"
"What?"
"Certainly. Went to her sty just now and found her finishing the last chapters. How the thing got there is more than I can tell you. Ink and paper... probably poisonous. Ha! Beach."
"Milord?"
"Beach, what is that vet's telephone number? You know what I mean. The telephone number of... what's his name?" "The vet."
"Matchingham 221, milord."
"Then get in quickly and put him through to the library.
Tell him my pig has just eaten the complete manuscript of my brother Galahad's reminiscences.
And so saying, Lord Emsworth made a dart for the door. Finding Beech in the way, he sprang nimbly to the right. The butler also moved to the right. Lord Emsworth dashed to the left. So did Beech. From above the mantelpiece, the portrait of the 6th Earl looked down approvingly on these rhythmical manoeuvres. He, too, had been fond of the minuet in his day.
"Beech!" cried Lord Emsworth, passionate appeal in his voice.
"Milord?"
"Stand still, man! You aren't a jumping bean!"
"I beg your lordship's pardon. I miscalculated the direction in which your lordship was intending to proceed."
This delay at such a time had robbed Lord Emsworth of the last vestiges of prudence and self-control. On the polished floor of the drawing-room, only a professional acrobat could have executed without disaster the bound which he now gave. There was a slithering crash, and he came to a halt against a china cabinet, rubbing his left ankle.
"I told you you would come a pearler," said Lady Julia, with the satisfaction of a Cassandra, one of whose prophecies has at last been fulfilled. "Hurt yourself?" "I think I twisted my ankle. Beech, help me to the library."
"Very good, milord."
"Ronnie has some embrocation, I believe," said Lady Julia. "I don't want embrocation," snarled the wounded man, as he hopped from the room on the butler's supporting arm. "I want a doctor. Beech, as soon as you've got the vet, get a doctor."
"Very good, milord."
The door closed, and as it did so, Lady Constance, her lips set and her eyes gleaming with a fierce light, walked to where Sir Gregory stood gaping, took the cheque from his fingers, and tore it across. A passionate cry rang through the room. It came from the lips of Percy Pilbeam.
"Hi!"
Lady Constance gave him one of the Keeble looks.
"Surely, Mr. Pilbeam, you do not expect to be paid for having done nothing. Your instructions were to deliver the manuscript to myself or Sir Gregory. You have not done so. The agreement is therefore null and void."
"Spoken like a man, Connie," said Lady Julia with approval. The investigator was staring helplessly.
"But the thing's destroyed."
"Not by you."
"Certainly not," said Sir Gregory with animation. He could follow an argument as well as the next man. "Not by you at all. Eaten by that pig."
"Just an act of God," put in Lady Julia.
"Exactly," agreed Sir Gregory. "A very good way of putting it. Act of God. No obligation on our part to pay you a penny."
"But..."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Pilbeam," said Lady Constance, becoming queenly. "I see no reason to discuss the matter further."
"Especially," said Lady Julia, "as we have a very urgent matter to discuss with Clarence, Connie."
"Why, of course, I was forgetting that."
"I wasn't," said Lady Julia. "You will forgive us for leaving you, Sir Gregory?" Sir Gregory Parslow was looking like a Regency buck who's just won a fortune at the turn of a card at Watier's.
"By all means, Lady Julia, certainly. As a matter of fact, I think I'll be getting along."
"I'll order your car."
"Don't bother," said Sir Gregory. "Don't need a car. Going to walk. The relief of knowing that infernal book isn't hanging over my head any longer. I think I'll walk 10 miles.
His eye fell on the tattered fragment of paper on the table. He gathered it up, tore it in half, and put the pieces in his pocket. Then, with the contented air of a man out of whose life stories of prawns have gone forever, he strode briskly to the door. Percy Pilbeam continued to sit where he was, looking like a devastated area.